You're tuned in to The Morning Program with Nadia Mitsopoulos on ABC Radio Perth.
And on the ABC Listen app.
Now, I wonder if you have seen or thought about seeing the movie Nitram. Now, it explores the life of Martin Bryant, a name that is never mentioned in this film and a name that a lot of people never mention. And it looks at the events leading up to the 1996 Port Arthur massacre, where he murdered 35 people and injured another 23. And it explores his life. Now, the title of this film is his name spelt backwards. And this movie attracted a fair bit of controversy, mainly because the conversation was around whether it should have been made in the first place. You know, what is the value in a film like this? What is the problem here? Now, join this debate, 1300 222 720, if you've seen it, if you're thinking about seeing it, if you are saying there is no way I will ever see that film. Be part of this chat, because I've got in the studio Dr. Glyn Greensmith. He's a journalism lecturer at Curtin University, but he actually did his PhD on mass shootings and he has investigated this thoroughly over many, many years. And I've also got Dr. Alison Taylor. She's a senior teaching fellow at Bond University who teaches film studies and ethics. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having me, Nadia.
Thank you.
Now, I'll start with you, Glyn, because you refuse to see this film. Tell me why.
It's such a complicated area, isn't it? I'm far from being a censorship guy, and we are dealing with a piece of art, so I get very nervous. Alison's article in The Conversation is excellent. Ben O'Shea did a review of it in The West, you know, that was so thoughtful and nuanced, where he said, oh, it's a really interesting film, but I can't rate it. I can't physically give it a rating. And I was also reading Richard Flanagan's piece, and of course, you know, a prolific Tasmanian author. God, he's a beautiful writer too, who said, you know, I want you all to go watch it, and I'm a Tasmanian. So there's such a nuanced and interesting argument. Where I come in is somewhere, it's simple and it's surprising. My research involves Port Arthur as a case study. And there's a reason I'm using Port Arthur to try and talk to American colleagues about how we can potentially reduce the number of mass shootings. And that is the fact that the way we cover mass shootings is a big part of why they happen. It's as simple as that. And if we change the way we cover mass shootings, we could stop quite a lot of them.
Can you just quickly explain that?
And
I appreciate it's complicated.
Killers, since the 1st of August 1966, the first modern mass shooting. Mass shootings happened every 5 years, maybe 4 years, around the world. And then on the 1st of August 1966, there was a shooting at the University of Texas. And it was the very first time the news media covered it a particular way, where they focused on the killer, they focused on how the crime happened, and they asked that all too crucial question, why did this happen? And to answer the question why, or to try and answer the question why, which was reasonable, what they did was say, well, here's everything we can find out about the killer for you. They showed photos of him as a kid holding a gun. They had people saying, you know, he had headaches sometimes. And what happened that day, a certain type of coverage happened, and mass shootings went from every 5 years to 15 a year that day. And they stayed there ever since. And so what the killers have told us, they've told us directly, is when we commit this crime, we expect the news to talk about us a certain way. And the argument we're trying to make is, if we just take some of those things that they're looking for away, they will try, they won't do this. They'll do something else. We don't know what they'll do. It could be awful, but they won't do this. They won't do this in this way. And that's why it's a fascinating area. But the reason that Port Arthur is still a really relevant conversation for us today is that this film isn't just a piece of art. It taps into something evidence-based. And this is going to sound surprising, I think, to all of you. The way we have treated the killer of Port Arthur is a big reason why we haven't had another mass shooting in this country. It's not just about gun control. Something happened in Australia that day. We took from him what we know he sought. And I've dealt directly with the psychiatrist who sat next to him in his hospital bed and said, why did you do this? Like, who? Tell me about yourself. So this isn't, you know, this isn't ethereal. This is people who have directly dealt with this killer. Mm-hmm. We know what he was looking for. We know what drove him to this crime as close as we can get there, because motive is difficult. But we know that the coverage of a shooting that happened a month before, and Alison mentions it in her article in Dunblane in Scotland, was a major factor in turning this killer from suicidal, which he was, to homicidal and suicidal. And something happened after Port Arthur. We as a nation said, no, you will not be what you seek. You will not be an anti-hero. You won't even be a monster. You will be pathetic. You will be reviled. And most importantly, you will be forgotten.
And you will be shut away and forgotten.
We put him in a pit and we forgot him. And I am of a belief, and so is the psychiatrist who did the analysis, that that was every bit as important as gun control, because we changed the script that day and we told any potential mass shooter, you ain't going to get what you're looking for.
So, Alison, Dr. Alison Tully, if I bring you in, I'm interested to know how you respond to what Glyn has said, and if any of that played on your mind when you decided to go and look at this film and review it.
Yeah, definitely. So first thing I'd say is that I respectfully defer. I'm not a mass shootings expert in any sense. I'm a film scholar whose research is really into kind of the ethical value of difficult cinema. And I think, so I'm definitely coming at this from a different perspective.
Sure.
And I can appreciate this is an incredibly sensitive subject. I can appreciate why a lot of Australians wouldn't want to touch this film with a 10-foot pole. But that's not the same as saying that I don't think it should be made. And yeah, I definitely wrestled with that when I was watching it, or rather in the anticipation of watching it. So I first heard the film was happening. I had a like sort of a response then of like, wow, what is this going to look like? How could you possibly treat this subject? I heard Justin Kurzel was making it, who is an incredible filmmaker, and he's tackled some really dark Australian stories. The one that I'll never forget is his representation of the Snowtown murders, which is very it's very bleak, and it does go into a lot of violence. And then, so I was concerned of how can you possibly treat this subject, and I was really surprised at the way that Kurzel and his writer Sean Grant handle the material. Of course, it's going to upset some people, but I think one of the concerns that Glyn raised just now was about the kind of attention seeking or glorification, not wanting to turn these, you know, criminals, horrific criminals, into anti-heroes. And I absolutely agree. Some of the news coverage that I've seen of the Port Arthur case and of Martin Bryant has been absolutely horrific. I watched a segment recently before going into this film, you know, it was like, oh, we've got this new interview with Martin Bryant or never seen before, and then they cut in with all this kind of like weird stock footage that looks like it's a horror movie, and it's kind of building you up to see him as a monster and making it kind of this sensationalistic, exciting program. And I just think, wow, that to me made me feel a lot more uncomfortable than anything in this film.
And so what do you make of the film and how it tackled it? And to be clear, because people are asking on the text, it doesn't show the shooting.
No, that's really important. Because the anticipation with this film was, you know, is this going to make a tragedy and trauma into what we'd think of as entertainment? You know, if you put anything in a movie, people start to think, oh, it's for entertainment value, it's for viewing pleasure, and which isn't what this is. It's a very uncomfortable film to watch. But I think they've gone to great lengths. I'm talking about Kurzel and Grant here, to not glorify him, to not make him an attractive character. They don't depict the massacre itself. That happens off screen. So there's
mind
no
you,
kind
that,
of
that scene, that there is a scene where he does pick up the gun.
He does.
And walks out of frame. And
we cut.
That reduced me to tears.
Oh, absolutely. I also cried a lot in this movie. But I think if you looked at it, what if he had treated the actual massacre? I can't see how you'd do that without it being kind of sensational or exploitative. So I think they've been very careful not to do that. And the way that Bryant is depicted here, or like you said at the start, he's not named, it's Nitram. They throw a lot of kind of potential explanations in for his actions. But I think what I really value about this film is that they don't oversimplify it and go, well, it's because he saw, you know, this other mass shooting and therefore decided to do this, you know, which would let us tie it up in a clear little bow and we can walk away and go, well, that's why that happened. No. Or it's just gun control.
It left me with more questions, and I can't still quite work out or understand what was going on in his mind, but also his difficulties, his mental and emotional difficulties, you know, inability to fit in. There was, you know, he was on medication, all those kind of things. I didn't come out of this film having a clearer understanding of that, but I don't think I wanted to be honest.
But I think it's kind of reductive to assume that we could in some ways. So it's a double-edged sword, because on the one hand, you know, you'd say a moral justification for making this film would be to give us a better understanding or education about how these things happen and how we can stop them. But on the other hand, to suggest that you can do that in 90 minutes is absurd.
One more question, and then I'm going to go to some calls. Penny, Tony, thank you.
Sure.
Stay there, because I know they want to be part of this panel. If I come back to you, Glenn, the filmmaker said that this movie was written as a response to the high number of mass shootings rather than serving as a reenactment to bring the gun control debate to the fore. Is that the way you do this?
Yeah, it's a good question. And Alison's point's really valid. You know, there's a lot of discussion that's been had around this film, around whether it should have been made at all. And I don't, you know, that's definitely for people like Alison, and that's not my field to talk about censorship and whether a film should. I'm saying more clearly, I'm not going to watch it. And if you feel morally icky about it, I'm here to tell you that the evidence actually supports you. So there's a crossover between an artistic depiction of what this young man was going through, as Alison was referring to, and my world, which is there a way we can actually draw a line around that sense of motive? Is there a way we can coalesce a lot of evidence together and say what we know and what we can still learn from it? And the answer is yes. In really surprising ways, the answer is yes. I was told 12 years ago by your former colleague here at ABC Radio, Gillian O'Shaughnessy, my current wife, this is really weird. This is long before I was a mass shootings researcher. I was on the radio and I was new to Western Australia. And I no clue how this came up, Nadia, but she said to me, you never say his name on the radio.
Huh?
And she said, if you say his name, you watch your phone lines, you watch those texts light up, and the people of Western Australia will say to you, don't say his name. Now, that was a completely different conversation at a completely different time before I was even a mass shootings researcher, but points to something tangible that we feel, which is the revulsion we have for this man and his actions. What I'm saying to you as clearly as I can possibly say it is, that matters. That is part of the evidence that we think is a reason why we haven't had a mass shooting in this country since. And obviously for mass shooting researchers, we don't want another one. And there are a lot of guns in this country still. So this
more now than there was in 1996.
There are more guns in this country now.
Not the semi-automatics and the automatics,
correct.
But there is definitely
legally
more guns.
Legally held, responsible owners, well-regulated. Congratulations to all, but more.
Yeah.
So this is a live conversation. This isn't esoteric. This isn't just about art for me. This is about the reality between the things that we do and the consequences they have.
Let's go to Penny. She's been waiting patiently. Hi, Penny.
Hi, Nadia. I live in Tasmania, about 60 k's away from Port Arthur when that mass shooting happened. We heard all the sirens, but we didn't know what was going on, and my mother rang me and told me. It was my late husband's birthday the same day as the massacre, and for every birthday ever since, we've always been reminded that that was the day of the massacre, and I would never, ever go and see that movie or even speak his name.
Do you think that's a common sentiment? Do you think other people feel that same way about his name and the way he's treated?
I think a lot of Tasmanians do. I don't live there now, but I think a lot of Tasmanians did. And I remember for ages afterwards, if you heard a car backfire, you'd turn around to see who was shooting. It was... Yeah.
Oh, Penny, thank you so much. I can't imagine what that would have been like. Darren says Underbelly and Chopper definitely turned criminals into stars, which turned me away from that type of viewing, and I will not be watching those films. Thank you. Phil says Mark Chapman said that he thought killing John Lennon would elevate his standing, but admitted that it had the opposite effect and he's a bigger nobody than ever before. Let's go to Tony, who's also been standing by to have a chat to you too. Hi, Tony.
Hello, how are you going?
Yeah, good.
I've been told to hurry up by a producer, I'll get into it.
You're good.
He's not forgotten because we're still talking about him, even if we don't mention his name. I say to people, don't anybody go and see this movie, number one. And number two, I've written so many letters around the world to politicians. When these people perpetrate these crimes, the number one thing they shouldn't do is mention their name at all. They should call him X or should call him K or anything whatsoever but their name, because all they're looking for, these people, is notoriety. They are nobodies, and then these horrific crimes that they perpetrate elevates them in their sick mind to important people. So why do they even mention their name? In even the media, it's a type of glorification of these events, that they mention their names. You know, this person did this and this person did that. Even if they kill themselves, who cares? The number one thing they should do, they should report on the incident, but they should never, ever, ever mention the guy's name. And then forgotten, they should put him in a room on his own and never, ever, ever have contact with humans again. Forgotten, buried. But no, here we are. We're still talking about him, even if his name is back to front or front to back. You should never, ever, ever mention these people's names.
Doc, thank you very much for that, Tony. Alison, how do you respond to that? Because that's a very deliberate strategy, isn't it, in the film, that the name is not mentioned?
Yeah, so they're acknowledging straight up that is a dangerous thing, this idea that the name itself is kind of contagious and dangerous, and so they're avoiding it, absolutely. And I wanted to make a point, though, as well, that, you know, those of us who were alive when this happened, and I know that's most of us and probably most of your listeners as well, it does have a very deep and lasting impact and trauma. But, I teach 18 and 19-year-old uni students who haven't even necessarily heard of Port Arthur and don't know what the impact was on our gun culture. So I'm wondering, too, whether there's something to be said for an historical kind of value in having this back in the consciousness, as difficult as that may be.
It is so reasonable, and it makes such sense, and it's such an important thing that documentaries and films can do. Unfortunately, it just crosses a very important area where we know the evidence says just by the way that we look into his life, we provide potential killers with a template that says if you are a loner, if you are ignored and forgotten, if you are a loser but you have the right equipment, you can change that. You can make it that we will talk about you. We will delve into your life. We will publish your manifesto. We will show your home videos. We'll check every Facebook post you ever did, not for nefarious reasons, but definitely for nefarious outcomes. And if I can say, Nadia, no, that's the evidence. And all I'm trying to say is that there's a link between a movie and the evidence around the way we report mass shootings being a fundamental part of them. If I can offer one opinion.
And would it have been any different if it was a documentary?
Yes. No.
Same deal.
The surprise, and I know it sounds oversimplistic, and it's so hard to quantify, the way we have treated that killer, the way we have reviled and ignored him, is a part of why we haven't had another one. I know that sounds unusual, that there is great power in what we did that has not been replicated in other countries in the same way, that have been plagued by mass shootings. So just put guns to one side for a second, and the fact that we have more guns. This is alive. This is a relevant argument. This is a case study I can take to the US and have and say, look at this. There is a way that this can be done. There is a way that these stories can be told. And let me just offer one. This is an opinion. There are 1,000 stories out of Port Arthur. There are 1,000 stories out of every mass shooting. Incredible, tragic, inspiring, heroic, unbelievable stories of humanity. His is the one I care about the least.
Did the filmmakers get this one wrong, Alison?
I mean, this is my opinion. I don't think so. I think if you're going to make a film about this, and the question of whether you should is a totally different question, but if it is made, I can't imagine it being treated with more sensitivity than they have. And I totally take Glenn's point about telling you know, what about the victim stories? I was thinking about that this morning, but I guess I'd still be wondering how, in telling that story in a film, if you were going to do that, you would still butt up against this question of mass violence, of why you're telling this story, and you're still going to have to wrestle with these kind of incredibly complex questions about representation, of how you handle that, that I don't think it would be just a clear-cut kind of answer to the problem. I think you'd still have to deal with what are we going to show, how does this story go? But yeah, I think there's a huge gap between something like Chopper, where the criminal is kind of this larrikin funny man, versus something like Nitram, where I think you don't look up to him. He's not a likable character. You feel sorry for the situation rather than him. I don't know how you felt watching it, but I felt incredibly sad, but I realised it wasn't an empathetic response.
I mean, in his shoes. Look, I cried at the end. That when he picks up the gun and walks out of the shot, and then the final scene is, you know, his mum smoking a cigarette, just staring into space. I cried. And then I had to go back and read the text afterwards, because then you've got the text that makes that point that you raised, Glyn, that we have more guns owned in Australia now than we did in 1996. I felt at times that I was wondering, should I be feeling sorry for him? Should I be thinking maybe if he got better mental health treatment, maybe if he was on the right medication, maybe if he was treated differently by, maybe if, and then I'd have to stop myself and go, no, he's what he is, and that's it, and don't pull me into this. And I just felt that I had to walk away a couple of times because I watched it on my computer on a screen, so I was able to walk away, which I think I needed to do. I'm not sure I could have done the whole 2 hours in one sitting.
And just to be really clear, I think, because something Alison said there was really interesting, that the act of not naming him, the act of ignoring this film, the act of going in the path that I'm suggesting around this isn't passive. It's contributing. This is an active engagement with the process of saying, I don't want another mass shooting in this country. So it isn't just a refusenik position. It's participating, and it's participating by denying these people what they sought and making sure that we as a nation play a part in it not happening again.
Thank you so much to both of you. This has been an interesting conversation. I think a necessary one. Dr. Glyn Greensmith and Dr. Alison Taylor, thank you to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
You're tuned in to The Morning Program with Nadia Mitsopoulos.
ABC Radio Perth and WA.